bill to be heard today is Senate Bill 273. Senator Cowdery?
Yeah, I have my... We was going to get Ed Sniffen, if he's online, to testify so we can help us with it.
Oh, good. Thanks. And we have Senator Terrio, Senator Kukesh, Cowdery, and Huggins are present. Mr. Sniffen?
Yes, Chairman. We're here. We're having a hard time hearing you. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, we can. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Can you give us your thoughts from the perspective of Department of Law on this bill, please?
Yes, I can, Chairman and Senators. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Ed Sniff, and I'm with the Department of Law here in Anchorage. And I've been working with different auto groups and Senator Cowdery on this bill or a version of it for the last 2 years. And we've had some conversations with the industry about how to resolve a current problem we have in our statute. Our statute, as it is written, prohibits auto dealers from selling current model motor vehicles. A current model motor vehicle is a used vehicle, but it's still within the current model year. And the way our statute is written now, no dealers are allowed to sell those types of vehicles. So if you take one in on trade, even if you're the franchise dealer for the manufacturer, you couldn't sell it. So if you take it in on trade, you basically have to warehouse the vehicle until it's at least a year old or until the next model year comes out. And that's created a problem for us because we really can't enforce that statute. It would require us to yank all of these vehicles off everyone's lot in the state of Alaska. And that just does a disservice to consumers. And so we haven't been enforcing that statute. And what SB 273 does, it fixes that problem by removing the current model language out of the statute. So cars either new or it's used. If it's used, you can sell it as long as you don't sell it as a new car. And if it's new, that is if it has a manufacturer's statement of origin, then you need to be a franchised auto dealer and have a sales and service agreement with the manufacturer to sell it. So we are certainly in support of this bill. It does fix this problem. There are a host of other ways to probably address this issue as well. We have not been successful at reaching a compromise with all the different interest groups on how to address some of the other perceived issues surrounding this this matter. But I think this is a good fix, and if we need to address other issues down the road, we can. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have. Thank you.
Yeah, questions for Mr. Sniffen?
I had, from last week, or when we had this bill, both the used car and the new car dealers supported this. It was something that needed to be done. So, just that for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Sniffen, and Charlie Huggins again. It appears to me that listening to all parties that spoke on this, that this essentially brings us in line with what is being practiced and takes away the violation that's currently happening but not enforced. Is that correct?
Chairman Huggins, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you very much. Other comments, committee members, questions? It's the intent of the chair to move this bill today. Senator Cowdery?
You ready for a motion?
Yes, sir.
I move that we pass Senate Bill 273 forward to the next committee of referral, which I think is Labor and Commerce.
Okay, that's
for individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Okay, which is a zero fiscal note?
Zero fiscal.
Okay, thank you very much. We've moved on to the next committee. Thank you, Senator Cowdery, and thank you, Ryan.
That's tough.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was there any objection?
Yeah, that's just part of the, for
yeah,
the record.
I agree. Do you have an objection?
No, I just want to make sure you asked
yep.
so
yep.
the
sorry.
Record reflected
no,
that.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the correction. And we've just been joined by Senator French. Let the record show. Our next bill is a Senate Bill 303. We have a committee substitute for Senate Bill 303. Take about 2 minutes.
Cowdery?
Yeah, I make a motion to adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 303, Transportation.
Is there objections? None. Okay, with that, today we have the Kibata personnel here. Mayor Wirtz, could you please present this bill? And while Mayor Wirtz is getting seated, they were scheduled for 1 hour. We've moved one bill. I know it's hectic for committee members. We appreciate your coming today. And it feels like we're kind of smashing 5 pounds into a 2.5 pound bag. Let's see how that works.
Thank you, Chairman Huggins. Members of the committee, I'm George Wirtz, the chairman of the board of the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, a public corporation created by the legislature in the spring of 2003, and I might add a very wise move because it gives this state the opportunity to participate in public-private financing of transportation projects. I'm joined today by a number of people. One of our active board members is Deputy Commissioner Tom Botan, who's right behind me. We also have as a board member the Commissioner of Transportation, who's represented today by John Manley, who's in the second row behind me. We should have on the telephone the Jim Cantor, who is the chief of the statewide transportation section of the Attorney General's office, and he's in Anchorage. Was going to call in by phone. And of course, on my immediate right is our project counsel, Mr. Bill Green, who has done the majority of the work on preparing the bill as these amendments that we've asked. So we are here in support of the committee substitute for Senate Bill 303, and I have Mr. Green here who can give you a very brief overview, and then either whatever is the wish of the body to proceed with a brief run-through of what the changes are or just simply to answer questions. So, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like Mr. Green to give you a few moments.
I was wanting to know the changes, the difference in the two bills.
Mr. Green will quickly walk through those things.
And just up front, so everybody understands what we're doing here, we're essentially at this point looking at enabling legislation that permits, given scenarios, that Kibata goes forward with a capability or potential for capability. In this case, we're talking about a funding mechanism and some assurance in being able to do that. So with that, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, thank you very much for allowing us to appear before you today. We appreciate that. Real quickly, I want to advise all of you that the staffs of this committee, Senator Huggins' office, Legislative Affairs Agency, has been very insightful, cooperative, and very professional in assistance that they've given us in guiding us through the mechanics of the legislation, and we're very grateful and appreciative of that, particularly Deb Gunman of Senator Huggins' office and Brian Kane of the Legislative Affairs have been very, very helpful. This committee knows, the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority was created in 2003 to build a bridge across Kinnick Arm for the purpose of connecting the municipality of Anchorage and the Matanuset-Sitna Borough to improve the transportation systems in Upper Cook Inlet and to stimulate and enhance the support for economic development in the growth of the state on a statewide basis. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has been for almost 2 years now investigating, studying, and doing their environmental impact statement, during the course of which we've come to learn several things. As you all know, there is federal funding available to this project. And notwithstanding whether we receive all or some of the funding that's available from the federal aid program, it will be insufficient to complete the project. Consequently, this project must look to other public and private financing sources in order to fulfill the financial requirements for its construction and operation. And we can thank our congressional delegation for supporting this bridge with the funding. What we have discovered during the course of our studies investigations is that notwithstanding the fact that the original enabling legislation was extremely good, when it came to the public and private sectors, and when I say public, I'm talking about particularly the Federal Highway Administration and its transportation infrastructure and financing program, in other words, a program where you can obtain subordinated loans for a highway construction project, as well as the public sector, or as well as, excuse me, the private sectors that may in any number of ways involve themselves in the construction operation of the project. And the project, as you all know, is a toll project, so there'll be toll revenues for the use of the bridge. And in our discussions with various experts who've been through the process of raising funds from the private sector as well as funds from the Federal Highway Administration, it's become apparent that they are adamant that our enabling legislation, in other words, the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority Act, be specific in several respects. For example, TIFIA, Federal Highway Administration, wants our statute to mention them as a source of funding by name. The issuance of bonds required some additional provisions that would bring the Authorities Enabling Act up to a level that the bond market would be satisfied and that bond council would accept. So that is the purpose of this legislation that's before you, is simply to clarify and make more specific the powers of the authority to, in an effort to assure both the public and the private financing sectors to which the authority anticipates it will go for assistance in the construction financing, that the authority has the necessary underlying legislative authority to allow them to feel comfortable and secure in dealing with the authority in that financing arrangement, whatever that might be, whether it's simply a direct loan, subordinated loans, revenue bond issuance, or what is now a very exciting and active area, and that's public-private partnerships, where the private sector invests and takes its return out of a portion or all of the toll revenues until the cost of construction is done. Those are very popular. They've been very successful across the country, and they are one of those mechanisms by which additional funding that is needed for this project could be raised. So what this particular piece of legislation does is to provide changes to the Enabling Act, to the Authorities Act, to make clear those provisions that these financing agencies, both public and private, want to see in order to obtain a feeling of security in dealing with Kubota. So this bill provides exclusive authority to Kubota to set the amount of the bridge tolls. It provides explicit authority to enter into these public-private partnerships and other financing arrangements of the type that I've mentioned. It authorizes obtaining the non-recourse loans from the Transportation Infrastructure and Finance Innovation Act, that's TIFIA, from the FHWA. It sets the dollar amount of revenue bonds that the authority may issue, and it provides several different means for collection of tolls and other obligations owing to the authority that need to be collected. This bill will enable the authority to proceed toward finalization of the financial arrangements necessary to obtain the remainder of the funding, whatever that happens to be, in order to construct it and operate and maintain the bridge. There have, thanks to State Bond Council and the State Attorney General's Office, as well as Mr. Patton at the Department of Revenue, since the original legislation was introduced, we've been requested, or we have suggested, a number of changes be made. Those changes are almost all in the nature of technical amendments, in the sense that they eliminate redundancies. They clarify language that people have come to read two different ways, and correct some technical errors. There was a miscitation, for example, in one of the statutes referred, federal statutes referred to. But none of the changes in the committee substitute are of a significant substantive nature, different than what was in the original bill. So I'm prepared to proceed to try to answer questions you may have, to take you through the amendments, amendment by amendment, or to provide you what I might be able to do at your wish. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Mr. Reed?
Yeah. You've come up with a toll figure?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Condrey, I'm going to defer to Chairman Wirtz to answer that. I think he's probably more versed in the specific financials than I am. I'm more in the mechanics.
Senator Condrey, we don't have a final number, but we have had some research done by one of the preeminent tolling authorities in the nation, Wilbur Smith Associates out of New Haven, Connecticut. They have analyzed the Department of Labor population numbers, the University of Alaska's ICER organization's forecast. They've looked at the polling done by the Dittman Research Group out of Anchorage of those that commute from the Matsu Valley to Anchorage daily. They've asked the questions, if a bridge were available, would you use it? They looked at all of that information and the Department of Transportation's profile and the Matsu Borough's expectations for land development, and they believe that this toll could range from $3 to $5. They also recommend, just as an aside, that once it's set, it not be changed for like 10 years, and we're very measured in increases. Although their initial analysis expected larger federal grants and some state participation, which may or might not be available, I believe the $5 range, perhaps a slight bit more, would still be a credible a toll fee. I do want to point out that the industry nowadays is very strong in electronic tolling. That's where you have a little transmitter card on your dashboard or in your windshield. You can run through at full highway speed. There's no toll gate, no collection box. Electronically, it signals this card and records your passage on your account, charged to your credit card at the end of the month, and in that way there's no slowing down. They offer and recommend a 20% discount to the toll just simply for using electronic cards. So long answer to a short question, but thank you, because it's so important to the public to understand that this bridge as a toll facility has got to be affordable, and we're going to go through a strenuous financial analysis before any investor is going to plunk down money for this bridge to make sure that it is operational. And that range of toll looks like it's very doable.
Senator Kelly.
Yeah, I think the Whittier Tunnel is $12, and I don't know the stream of traffic, but I think the study they did with that, I think there's more traffic than what the study said. And also, just as since you're selling bonds, if you don't convince them that the bucks are there to pay back the bonds, you're not going to sell the bonds. Is that true?
And that's correct. And nothing would be more embarrassing than to put together a financial plan and go to Wall Street and have everybody shy away from our offering. So, no, we'd be very, very cautious not to face that dilemma.
Well, I think this bridge, of course, I've been supporting it for a long time, and I hope it gets done. And anyway, there's some debate on whether to put a railroad on the bridge. Now it's scheduled for four lanes, I believe, with a bike path. Is that true?
Senator Cotter, it's certainly our intention to have a capacity in that bridge to handle all of the traffic growth that's expected. Whether we start with four lanes or we add the lanes later or we restripe the lanes or we have a reversible center lane is a technical detail that we'll address as the traffic builds up. But to answer your question on the railroad, no, a highway bridge and a railroad bridge are two different structures. We are committed, however, to make sure that the highway bridge, the toll bridge we're developing now, will be railroad compatible. And I mean by that, that a railroad could be built right alongside it. The curves, the elevation changes, the grades, if you will, would all be within railroad specs, so that hypothetically, when it's time to build the railroad, they simply put the pile driver on the highway bridge, drive the piles for their bridge, lay the new structure right alongside, and everybody happy, and saves the railroad a whole lot of money in construction.
And the railroad has a different financial ability than you folks, is that true?
Yes, they certainly do, including the fact they have a revenue stream, and we don't have a revenue stream, but we will eventually.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, while we're on the subject of tolling, this bill and the revisions to the bill gives the toll-setting authority to Cabana explicitly. Where did it reside? Where does it reside right now? If we didn't make the changes, who would set the tolls?
Mr. Chairman, Senator French, the truth of the matter is it was in the original bill, but it wasn't all that clear. But with advice of the financial community, they say make sure it's explicitly clear that there's only one toll-setting authority, and that should be the Kinnickarn Bridge and Toll Authority, immune from interference by others. Nothing would be worse to a lender then suddenly face the possibility of someone else dabbling with the revenue stream. When you buy a bond, you want to know that it's going to get paid for. And if somebody else could step in, a third party, and change that revenue stream, it will, that's not a very good investment.
Who sets the toll for the Whittier Tunnel?
I'll have to defer to Mr. Manley of DOT if perhaps he knows.
John, do you have any? Who set the Whittier Tunnel toll?
I don't know.
Yeah. Tom, do you know?
I'm sorry.
I apologize. I don't know. It is a toll collected by DOT in that sense, as I remember, but and they don't have a debt to pay off. It's an operational toll, I think, as I remember the original discussion. So I think that's an administrative toll, not one that pays back capital cost.
There were no bonds issued with the Whittier Tunnel.
No.
It was all out of pocket.
It's all out of pocket.
Right. But, of course, my concern is that some of the information I've been given is that the initial Whittier Tunnel toll was estimated at $1.50, and now we see the Whittier Tunnel toll at $12. And if your toll projection works out anything even like that, we're all going to be in trouble. I just need to say I know the bridge is going to be built sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong by my questions, but now's the time where we have to ask some tough questions. So that's why I'm asking.
Senator French, you're absolutely right, and it's been disappointing that the federal money that was originally earmarked for the bridge is $230 million is now shrunk to something like $93 million. What we expected would be a state match equivalent is not on the table yet, unless the House and Senate Finance Committees decide to add it to the budget, because right now the governor did not add any. So we'll just have to wait and see. It's a tough call right now. If we only have the $93 million plus the 20% match, which a toll authority is entitled to from the state, that adds up to about $111, $112 million against a $600 million project. We feel reasonably comfortable if we had $200 million, we'd have, like buying a mortgage on your house. If you got a good down payment, the mortgage is pretty easy to find. If you have a small down payment, the mortgage is harder to find. We're going to have to work hard, no question about it. But we have already started those discussions with companies that are in that business. We've had several come and visit us. We had a symposium, the results of which will be posted on our homepage in the next 2 weeks. It had exactly to do with this. How do you deal with a construction project in a manner that attracts the most interest from financial standpoint and keeps the cost down?
if I can keep going on that. About the bonds, the original Kibata authority, the original Kibata legislation gave you bonding authority. It's in there. Is there something different about these non-recourse bonds that requires you to come back and get some more explicit language in the legislation here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator French, yes, the original legislation did set up the authority to issue revenue bonds, but it also said that the authority had to come back to the essentially said that the authority had to come back to the legislature to get approval for the amount of the bonds, and that's what we're doing. We're coming back and asking for approval for the amount of the bonds, the aggregate amount of the bonds that the authority could issue in total over a period of time, and that is part of the changes in this new in this legislation, is and that is one of the most significant parts of it, is simply asking, and
that's on page 5.
It's on page 5.
The amount is on page 6. Bottom of page 5, Senator French, the words being deleted. Bonds may not be issued unless the principal amount of bond is authorized by law. That was the original language. We want to
line 27.
That.
Line 27, 28.
And on the top of page 6, at line 6 is the new number.
I've got that as lines 24 and 25 on page 5. But
lines 24. You have the committee. I'm looking at the committee substitute.
Backslash G.
I'm sorry.
Oh, maybe I'm on. Oh, sorry. I'm on the one of my. Here we go.
Got
it. I can go from that too if you like.
That's fine. Let's go with the. Okay, I see it. 27, 28.
So that was the original language that is now being deleted, and as Chairman Wirtz said, if you turn to the second page, or the next page, page 6, line 5 and 6, sets the amount, the aggregate amount of the bonds that limit that could be issued.
$500 million.
Yes.
And would these be sold on Wall Street to investors, or are they, or what's the connection between them and the federal agency that's referenced on page 2, the U.S. Department of Transportation, TIFF, or TIFIA?
Okay.
What's the relationship there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator French, technically there's no relationship. They're both funding sources. The TIFIA, the federal government, they have a program whereby you can borrow federal monies and they will subordinate that debt to other senior debt. In other words, if we issued revenue bonds, that would be in the nature of a senior debt, and then we could go to TIFIA and borrow some additional that would be subject to the payment of those bonds first. So technically there's no connection in term from a legal perspective. From a financing perspective, they would work together. So the revenue bonds, and it'd be like revenue bonds issued by the state for other purposes, or by like housing finance, or like one of the other state corporations. They're revenue bonds paid out of only the revenue generated by the tolling authority. The state has no obligation on the bonds. They do not pledge the state's credit to the bonds. The bonds are paid solely out of the revenue of the authority. So they're two different financing mechanisms.
If I understand you, I just sometimes have to say it back because I'm not a financial wizard.
I'm not either.
The primary mechanism is to sell the bonds on Wall Street, having exchanged, having given that bond and gotten some money back in turn to build the bridge, you then go to the federal government and say, look at those bonds we've issued, and they'll give you, there's a little multiplier effect somehow there.
Well,
it lets you,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator French, what the TIFIA loan does is when the purpose of that program is to provide subordinated debt, in other words, like a second mortgage, so to speak, subordinated debt to fill gaps in your funding stream. So you fill some of the funding by the federal aid, some of the funding that's needed by your revenue bonds, some of the funding that's needed by a public partner, public-private partnership possibly, and then you fill some of the gap by a TIFIA loan. So there's a layered financing mechanism, and they have to be coordinated but they're not necessarily dependent on one another.
They all ultimately look to the toll as the source of the repayment.
That's absolutely correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions?
Yep.
Senator Tukesh.
Just a really simple one. The money that was earmarked, that's no longer earmarked, that was once $200 million, now down to $93 million. Have you used that $93 million in your calculations? And if so, are you really confident that you have it in your back pocket already?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kukesh, yes, we're facing the reality of the $93 million. At least we hope it doesn't go less than that. And if it does, we have a serious problem. But we've come up with a work plan that phases the project, that we think we can get some work done this summer. It also integrates some other funding streams, like a bill that will be before you, it is before you, the governor's supplemental, which includes the paving of the Port McKenzie Road. That was going to be a big cost to the bridge, but it's now proposed by the governor as a separate funding item in the supplemental. Those things happen and fall in line. We're working closely with the Port of Anchorage, which will share some costs that reduce costs for both of us. Putting that all together, we can get some, what I've been referring to as pre-built pieces done, so that we get past this initial round, we'll sit down with private investors and look for that public-private partnership that'll build the bridge and finish up the project. So that idea of phasing seems to be the way we can move ahead, even facing a dramatically reduced source of public money, federal and state money, and still be good for Alaska.
Senator Cavery?
Yes, this road, this paving job is not, well, one of the things that I like about it, we're now building modules over there. And some of the big modules we can't haul on the existing road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we fought getting the modules built here that we could be in Alaska and that we would be competitive. So this paving will certainly help cost of that. But the real benefit immediately is that we build more of the modules on that side. Some of these modules are huge and mm-hmm. very, very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And they cost upwards of $250,000 to $300,000 per module to get up there. So anyway, that's another reason I think of the paving, not to try to connect mm-hmm. it too much with it, mm-hmm. but it'll benefit the road too, and the bridge too.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cuddy, thank you for your comments on that, because there's a lot of winners in paving that road. Not only the movement of the modules, but the Yamatsu is moving ahead pretty quickly with the idea of a personnel ferry that's part of that Navy test ship. We have the chip plant that's hauling chips and shipping them out of Port McKenzie. For every vessel that comes in there, there's somewhere between 1,000 and 1,600 heavy truckloads that haul down that gravel road. It's 13.5 miles of gravel. It ought to be all asphalt. And thank you for bringing up the fact that there's lots of winners here, and some of them immediate, and then our bridge would be a little bit longer term, but it's certainly going to help having that work done, because when an investor looks at where are we and what's the certainty, when you see those kinds of things in place, it gives us a much easier chance, a better chance of getting private financing. Thank you, sir.
Mayor Wirtz, I'm probably the only person sitting here that wasn't in the legislature when Kubota passed. But in that light, it appears to me that the changes that are reflected here are empowering changes for you to be able to go out with, so that it essentially takes the risk or lowers the risk profile to lending agencies to be able to lend money and tightens that up based on feedback that you've received from different agencies. Is that an accurate portrayal?
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly right. Senator Huggins, I visited no less than 10 separate toll authorities around the country. As we speak, our executive director is in Tacoma, Washington, visiting the Washington State Toll Authority for the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. And we've talked to financial groups. We've hired the firm from the East Coast. They've all looked at our enabling legislation and say, this is a good bill. There's good work in here. And Alaska is right up with the best of them in the nation. And believe me, these toll arrangements, these public-private partnerships, Virginia, the Carolinas, in Florida, in the Florida Turnpike, in California, in Oregon, and now in Washington State. And we are entering the arena with the big boys. And thank you for passing the original bill, and thank you for your consideration of these improvements to that bill, because we're right up there with the best of them.
Right. And there are some aspects that allow you to collect things much like other agencies. The Anchorage Parking Authority, or whatever we call it today, I think has the authority to go after to your permanent fund, mm-hmm. and or if you get a parking ticket and things of that nature. That and there are some provisions in this legislation that permit that, but I don't think that's really a change per se. But it's the sort of thing that has to be tightened up. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes, that is exactly what your prior statement was exactly correct, and it's true with this with respect to these collection provisions as well. While there was always language in the enabling legislation that would appear to give the authority all the powers it needed to construct, maintain, and operate the toll bridge, collect what to do it, they have the power to, you know, go collect things like any other business does. The financial advisors and other toll operators that we've talked to, the Kubota's talked to over a long period of time here, and the financial community has simply said, we want your language to eliminate all possible other interpretations so that it's clear, there is no room to argue about it. Because if we finance, we want to have absolute confidence that the authority specifically can do X, Y, Z, and whatever else is needed to be. So that's part of that, is simply to make those collection authorities more specific, more clear, so there's no question on the part of the financing agencies that we can in fact collect the tolls.
It appears to me that most of the things that the provisions here, based on that it is a bonding proposition, tightening that it's more financial than it is transportation, though it's to build a transportation infrastructure. Correct me if there's something that's not true in that.
No, Mr. Chairman, what this bill really does, what this committee substitute really does, is to take one step further than the original enabling legislation to allow the authority to build a bridge without 100% public financing. And to do that, what you just said is correct. There are a number of these provisions. They're not new. They're just a tightening up, a clarification, a more precise statement of the authorities and powers that the agency has. It does not change the function of the agency. The agency's function still is to build a bridge across Kinnickarm to connect the Matsu and the municipality of Anchorage for the stimulation of the economic growth and development of the area, and to improve the transportation systems in Upper Cook Inlet. That hasn't changed. These are just making clear that we have that the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority has the powers and authority necessary to obtain that public and private sector financing that it's going to have to go out and seek to supplement the federal rate financing that it's going to receive, whatever that amount is, whether it's the 94 or the 231, it needs to do that.
It places the ceiling on what you can bond for, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It places the ceiling on the total amount of revenue bonds that can be issued by the authority. We have, I should mention this, this bill before you was reviewed by bond counsel, by the Department of Revenue, and Mr. Patton can speak to that. They were very helpful in making several suggestions for some corrections and changes, both in language and structure. We've appreciated their comments. We've incorporated those, and those are incorporated in your committee substitute. So both the Attorney General's Office and Bond Counsel have taken a look at this. Bond counsel, I got word this morning, is satisfied that the changes are appropriate for their purposes. We have one item in the committee substitute. It's a typographical error that we do need to correct, and I can get to that as you like. But
right. And if we made the assumption that this had an effective date today, that tomorrow you cannot go out and bond until you go through the normal process with the state bond committee. Doesn't change your authority outside, your internal authority to collect money and some degree of certainty for debt collection, a bond ceiling.
Mr. Chairman, yes, you're correct, with one exception. The bonds still have to be reviewed by the state bond committee to make sure that they are not an adverse credit to the state of Alaska. But in the general revenue bond statutes, the bond committee sets the maturities, the amounts, the provisions and terms of the Trust Indenture Act, Trust Indenture, and those kinds of things would now be done by the Kinnickerham Bridge and Toll Authority. The state bond committee would still have to review and say these bonds will not adversely affect, essentially would say these bonds don't adversely affect the credit of the state. And the interest rate, there is an interest rate limitation built into the legislation where the authority cannot pay an interest rate on the bonds beyond the same limit that the bond committee establishes for all other revenue bonds. So we've essentially taken a lot of their mechanical provisions and put them in our statute so we reflect the state bond committee's requirements. We are still obligated under the Kavada legislation to get the approval of the bond state bond committee.
Right. Any bonds that you're bonded for, part of the committee process from the state level is to ensure that does not adversely affect state bonding.
That's correct, sir. Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And we would not want that either.
Right. And there's another provision, as I recall, in Senator French, I think, brought attention to it. It says bonds may not be issued unless the principal amount of the bond issued is authorized by law.
That sentence being deleted.
That's one of the changes on page 5.
Yes, sir.
That's self-evident. I just want to restate that. But, I mean, it has to be authorized. The authorization that we're talking about is a ceiling of $5 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The authorization that language is now contained in this particular committee. Substitute.
Mr. Chairman, what lines were those you were reading?
And page 5.
Page 5, and 27 and 28.
Right.
That's old language.
Point of order, right?
Old language.
Those
I'm sorry.
Coming out.
Okay.
Correct.
Old language.
Okay. And being replaced by the words on lines 5 and 6.
Right.
Page 6.
Let's go.
Right.
Say that again.
You've narrowed it down.
Yes, correct.
Specific amount.
Yes. Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I stand corrected. Good. Thank you. And that, just in review, is on page 6.
Lines 5 and 6.
Right. Okay.
So that, in the process of doing this, there's been some little bit of restructuring, but lines 5 and 6 are the replacement for what was now shown in lines 27, 28 in the preceding page. It just put it in a different way.
Okay, additional questions for either Mr. Green or the mayor?
Just a couple points. Oil taxes and the gas pipeline are the biggest topics, of course, here in the building. But one of the things that's coming up as we discuss the gas pipeline is the cost of steel and how it's going up every year. And it may be that the federal loan guarantees we got a couple of years ago are no longer sufficient to cover the true cost of building a natural gas pipeline because it's just getting more expensive every day to do business. What effect has that increase in raw materials had on your estimates of the price of the project?
Mr. Chairman, Senator French, let me give an effort here to answer that, because we were concerned with the same thing. So Kubota commissioned their engineering firm, PND, Piatrofus Nottingham Drage in Anchorage, and Rise Alaska, a very successful project management firm, to take a look at commodity pricing, to look at the potential designs, and those two concepts for bridge construction. One is a reinforced concrete, the other is all steel truss. And either way, they priced that out and re-estimated our project cost in 2005 dollars and in as-spent dollars, which typically averaged about 2008. And the good news is that even facing those kinds of increases, we believe we're still at $600 million or less. We had such a huge contingency in that first number that we've accommodated the commodity increases. And we expect that increase to continue, particularly if there's a high demand for steel around the world, as China is now emerging. The cost estimates could creep up, but we still, even at this recalculated number, we still have about a 20% contingency, and that's pretty good. That's almost $100 million. Thank you.
I'll close. I don't want to take up too much time. I see you've got folks that want to testify, and I want to make sure I don't want to take up too much time. But I had to look up the word non-recourse bond before I came down to the hearing, and so I typed it into Google to see what I can get. And the first thing I got was this helpful document, really, from the Congressional Budget Office about how you finance highways. But one of the paragraphs really caught my eye, and I just have to kind of put this out there as a cautionary note because it kind of struck home to me. It said, several concerns have led federal government and most state governments to shy away from financing highways with debt and to opt instead to finance them primarily on a pay-as-you-go basis. One concern is that borrowing may reduce fiscal discipline and open the floodgates for projects of limited merit. Estimates of the benefits and costs of any project are generally uncertain and often subjective. Without the restraint inherent in a pay-as-you-go approach, fiscal conservatives worry that proponents of a project will overestimate benefits and underestimate costs. And, of course, program advocates take the opposite position. I can't sit with you and figure out how much this thing is going to cost. My gut feeling is that it's your estimates are lower than what they're really going to be when we get done. And I'm just concerned that, the less hard money we put in and the more bonds we put in, ultimately that toll figure is going to rise to a place where suddenly no one's going to pay to use the bridge. And I don't know where we wind up, but it's not where I want to be, which is ultimately with a bridge someday that everybody can use and run over to the Mat-Su and enjoy the great country that's out there. So that's I just had to put that concern on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions for the mayor or Mr. Green?
We're going to go online here now at this point in time. Anton Johansson?
Yes, my name is Anton Johansson. I reside at 1887 Arctic Loon Circle in Fairbanks, Alaska. I had a couple of concerns along the lines of the last gentleman. Mine is that the Whittier Tunnel was constructed, and the understanding was that the operational cost of that tunnel would be met with tolls. The traffic, to my knowledge, is now lower than was projected, and we currently take $2 million a year out of the STIP. That's a federal highway funding program that we use for constructing our roads in the state, and pay for the operations of that tunnel. And it's also my understanding that there is some lobbying effort to increase the amount of money that's taken from the STIP each year to pay for that. I can only, I'm concerned that if we end up in the same situation with this bridge structure, that we may find ourselves not taking $2 million a year out of our program, but 50 or 80 or some other larger number that would effectively destroy the highway program in this state. I'm concerned also about the funding mechanism in place for these access roads, and is it the intent of Kubota that these roads be constructed before there's a bridge? In which case we could end up with roads to nowhere. And I'm also concerned about the estimate for the cost of that structure and whether or not there's been a third party that has, outside of PNND, that's looked at the cost of the bridge structure. Thank you.
Mr. Johansson, it's Senator Huggins here. I see you're listed down as Great Northwest Incorporated. Could you just tell us whom you're affiliated with?
Yeah, I'm a highway contractor. I'm a partner in Great Northwest Incorporated.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Johansson? Okay. Yeah. Do you have anything else to add, Mr. Johansson?
No, thank you. That's it.
Yeah, thank you very much for your comments. We will now go to Anchorage. We have two people there, Mr. Steve Clary and Mr. Jim Cantor. Mr. Clary, are you present?
I am, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, please. Would you just put yourself on the record and proceed?
Of course. My name is Steve Clary. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, member-based group here in Alaska with 2,000 members across the state. I'd like to share some concerns with you briefly today on Senate Bill 303. I have not had a chance to look at the CS, but I think it's fairly similar to the bill in front of you. First of all, I might generate more questions than I have comments for you, but I'm confused on what it means to be a public corporation and Kubota's relationship with the state. It seems that they're taking the good parts of state involvement and not the downsides. So we get to hear that the state's not liable for the debt that Kubota incurs, making it, you know, separate from the state. But then Kubota also gets to use eminent domain, or at least that's my reading of this bill. And that's definitely something that has been reserved for government agencies. So it's unclear to me that if Kubota did go bankrupt, if there is a large debt, would the state have to assume that debt? The bill also gives the power of Kubota to sell land and also to receive land from the state. So it looks like it's almost being set up as a land grant type of thing. And I'm more curious about that, and perhaps I'm misreading the bill. And also the limiting of the bonding seems to be a handicap of sorts, and I don't know if that's critical to the financing. And if they do need to put a limit on it, seems like they would want to put a higher one in case the $93 million is all that comes through. And I'm sure Mayor Wirtz and the others have heard the unfortunate figures from the DOT in that only 80% of those federal monies end up making it here to the state from the federal government, unfortunately. A couple final concerns. One is eminent domain. I know that Senators French and Terrio were talking about a bill in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee today about eminent domain. There's four others, to my knowledge, all of which limit the power of eminent domain. There's one by Representative Lynn that I believe is limiting the powers of eminent domain for a public corporation. I believe it's AHFC. I will have to check on that. But I don't know if Mr. Wirtz in his testimony had gone to 10 other toll authorities. So my question is the eminent domain something that other toll authorities receive, and is it consistent with other public corporations in Alaska? And I apologize for not doing the research on that myself. Finally, along with the eminent domain, it appears there could be conflicts of interest between Kubota and the land ownership status on either side, of the bridge. That is, if Kubota, staff or board owned land, but was also deciding on the eminent domain of that land, that appears to be a conflict of interest to me. And my final one might not be much of a conflict of interest, but I did look up the State Bond Committee, which as now encompasses the Commissioners of Community and Economic Development, Administration, and Revenue. And the Commissioner of Revenue, as you know, is also a board member of Kubota. So again, there's the chance that both the issuer and the receiver of the bond would be the same person. I hope those all made sense. I'm happy that I got to listen to the whole meeting, and I look forward to learning more. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Clary. Questions for Mr. Clary? Mr. Clary, the one thing I missed, are you supportive or not supportive of Kinnick Arm Crossing?
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry I didn't mention that, sir. And our group is not in support of the Kinnick Arm Crossing because we believe it's going to be a financial burden, similar to what Mr. Johansson says, in that the state might be stuck with both the operations and construction costs of it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Mr. Cantor?
I'm the supervisor of the Attorney General's Office Transportation Section, and I'm really here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Yeah, did you hear the questions raised by Mr. Clary, Mr. Cantor?
Yes. As far as eminent domain authority, the Alaska Railroad has eminent domain authority. They're a similar type authority, and they're actually one of the public corporations that we used as a model when we drafted this Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority law. The Kinnickarm Toll Authority law, when it was drafted, drew up Alaska models. It was kind of a cookie cutter based on Alaska models. And since then, we've discovered that, the type of bonding, of revenue bonding for this type of authority has some more specific requirements. And I think that's really what this bill addresses.
Okay. How about land and granting?
You mean as far as the authority to own and manage land?
Right.
Well, currently land is managed either by DNR or DOT, but to the extent the authority would be managing a bridge and need the certainty of management in order to assure the bond investors that there was certainty, that would give them the ability to own some land as well.
Okay, there was a question about the Commissioner of Revenue and being on the board.
Yes, that's true. The Commissioner of Revenue is on both boards.
Yeah. But from a legal perspective, that was raised by Mr. Cleary. Do you see any conflict of interest or anything of that nature in that respect?
Not from a legal perspective. I will say that from the Attorney General's perspective, we want a bill that will meet Kinnickarm's requirements, but also will not mess up the ability of the state's bond capacity and other aspects or other areas where the state issues revenue bonds, that it's really a revenue bond. It's not one the state will end up holding the bag for. And so we have actually run this one through Department of Revenue as well as the State Bond Committee Council to make sure that we've got a bill that won't mess up the state's other obligations.
Yeah, other questions for Mr. Kentler?
Okay, we'll now go to within the room, Mr. Tom Booten.
I'd be glad to answer questions, Mr. Chairman, and maybe the questions that have come up, perhaps I should. Tom Booten, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. Department of Revenue has a seat on each of the boards that issues debt: Student Loan Corporation, Municipal Bond Bank, Alaska Housing, Industrial Development Export Authority, Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority, and maybe I'm missing one or two, and I happen to be the person who is delegated for those seats. Senate Bill 303 sets up the ability to issue standalone revenue bonds, and those bonds would not impact the state of Alaska credit. Some state agencies have the authority to issue a variety of different levels of credit. This, if you will, is the most distinct level of credit, or that most separated from the state's credit. And what I mean is, a student loan corporation, for instance, is authorized by the legislature to issue state moral obligation debt, and so their revenue bonds, and they are revenue bonds backed, of course, by student loan receipts, their revenue bonds are carry the moral obligation of the state, which is a higher level of credit and a higher level of commitment than you see in Senate Bill 303. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, a small amount of their debt is moral obligation debt. Some of their debt, of course, is a state guaranteed debt, and that's authorized not only by the legislature but by the voters. ADA debt, Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority, and the Energy Authority, some of their debt carries a moral obligation, and that has to be authorized by you, but most of their debt and most of their debt issuing programs are exact or like this, standalone revenue bonds. The International Airport System, which is internal in that it doesn't have a separate board, we priced $309 million of their bonds last month. That debt is like this in that it's a standalone revenue bond relying entirely upon the rates and fees of, in that case, the airport system.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Boothie?
Mr. Cleary raised the question of Commissioner Revenue sitting on the board. From your perspective as a revenue person, does that cause you any concern.
No, and as I said, the Department of Revenue is secretary to the State Bond Committee, but additionally, Department of Revenue has a seat on each of the boards that can issue debt, as I had gone through, and those boards, as I had explained, that issue debt of that have different levels of credit security, different levels of commitment by the state, and Senate Bill 303 authorizes standalone revenue bonds, and the bondholders' recourse would be limited to the rates and fees and the value of the structures and any revenues, any reserve funds that have been pledged by the Kinnickon Bridge and Toll Authority to repay the debt.
Okay, thank you. Take about a 2-minute break. One last person. We have Stephanie Hill, Mr. Merle Thompson from Wasilla. Is that accurate?
Merle Thompson, Massive Valley, Wasilla area. Actually, I live about probably 7 miles out, Kinnick Road. Near Vine. And I want to say that.
And whom are you affiliated with?
I'm representing myself. when I first heard about the bridge project, I was pretty much in favor of it right off the get-go. But the more and more that I've attended a lot of the meetings and a lot of the committee meetings, and the more I learn about it, the more questions that come to mind. And I'm one of those people that actually work in downtown Anchorage and commute from my house. And say the bridge was built today, I personally wouldn't be using it. And this is the reason. Even at a $5 charge each way, it is just about as fast for me to drive around. It takes about 50 minutes to get from my house to work, as it would be, and I've driven out to McKenzie many, many times, as it would be to go around the other way. And that's not counting the $10 charge that I would be paying, and that's, I think, an optimistic charge, the $10 I'd be paying going over and back. So it would actually cost me quite a bit more and save me only a few minutes of time in a perfect storm. That is, if the road were paved and we had the money to pave the McKenzie Road and the whole nine yards. Also, where I live, I live between the two most dangerous roads, probably, or at least they rank really high in the state. The Kinnick Road, about mile 4 to 6 out there, where we've had probably 7 or 8 deaths in the last few years, and also on the Parks Highway on the other side of me is the other danger spot. Both of those places could probably be remedied, I don't think, by adding more cops to keep people driving at a slower than speed limit to take care of it, but actually to straighten out the road in the wind curve, which is really bad, and probably do work on the other side. On Vine Road, where it comes into Kinnick and it also goes into the Parks Highway, I've lived out there 20-some years, and those roads are so busy now.
If you would, Mr. Thompson, don't describe all the roads to us. If you want to say you want to use this money for other roads, do that, because I think number of people here do not understand the roads and it's irrelevant to them. I happen to understand them, and I think Senator Cowdery is probably one of those. So I'm not trying to curtail your testimony for definity, but I think you're describing roads that people don't understand.
Well, okay, but just for the record, there needs to be a stoplight on one end of the road and on the other end of the road. We have stoplights on neither one of them, and that's another problem that probably could be addressed with transportation money that's being diverted for a road that is going to be paved in hopes that a bridge would be built. I can understand that it might help VECO out build modules to get the modules out of there, or it might help MPI get their trucks out there to the port faster. But in reality, people like me, and I've talked to a lot of people, I know a lot of people that work in Anchorage, they aren't going to be using that bridge either for the simple reason that I'm not going to be using it. Now, the further you get away from that bridge, like Wasilla, they're even less likely to use it. And Palmer, there's absolutely nobody out there going to use it. And another problem is I've talked to a number of business owners in the Wasilla area, and they have some fears, and these might be founded, that by having a bypass around Wasilla someday is going to actually make less and less people coming from Anchorage drive by their businesses and maybe even make their businesses go down. So, I mean, there's some genuine concerns all the way around the board about this project, and I think we have a lot of problems with potholes and every other thing in the transportation money that's not being addressed. And this is, I think, being very optimistic that we'll even get this bridge built. And believe me, I was totally for it when we had those federal dollars. But now when it's coming out of money that the state's going to have to pony up, I'm starting to have a little bit different feelings for it. And the more I hear about it, it's more like it's becoming more like a boondoggle to the boondocks. I mean, we have other things that we could use this money for that are probably a whole lot brighter. It might not be the testimony that you want to hear, but that's just my testimony.
Questions? So you're saying you would maintain the earmark. If the earmark was still on it, you would support the bridge. That's what I think I heard you say.
I think if we had those federal dollars like we did in the beginning, I would feel a lot better about it. But since we don't...
Which was the earmark. I mean, that guaranteed it going to the bridge. So if the earmarks were still there, you would support the bridge.
I'm not for earmarks, but if the federal money was there,
right.
I would.
That pot that was...
But okay. Since it's not, I'm not. Right.
And if the money came, if the money from the bridge that's going someplace now, if the money that reinforced then was diverted at a later date based on that project getting done and building the bridge, would you support the bridge? In other words, the Parks Highway, $10 million comes out of Kinnick Arm Crossing, goes to the Parks Highway, someplace around Big Lake Road. If later on some of the money that's going to be used for that goes to the bridge, would you support the bridge?
I would support the bridge in the future because I think in the future we're going to really need it. But, I mean, and I'm a fiscal conservative only because I have to be in my life. I mean, that's just how I run my life, and I turned out to be a fiscal conservative, and this doesn't make fiscal sense to me at this point in time. Or maybe if we're making more money from the oil taxes later on and we can afford to do it, it's a different story. But right now it seems like that we just don't have the money to be thrown around into a project when we have all these other things that are probably more important. And it's not just our area, it's all around the state.
Yeah. Okay, good. Other questions for Mr. Thompson? Thank you very much. And we have one other person that's here to speak. Stephanie Hill.
Emily Ferry.
I'm sorry, off net. Stephanie Hill?
Did you hear? I don't know. Is this Stephanie Kessler, president of the Government Hill Community Council? Did you get it that time?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. The teleconference button was being odd. So anyway, the points that I wanted to discuss, which I think were made, covered a little bit earlier, but I'd like to reemphasize them, is in particular the power of the Kinnick Arm Crossing and Kibata and their power of eminent domain. My concern and Government Hill's concern is that the Kibata board is a very small board, and it has a quorum of, it only requires a quorum of three people to exercise eminent domain, and they have three voting members, which would be Chairman Wirch, real estate broker Darcy Salmon, and Lyndon Vice President Dave Hagan. And our concern is if you have three private individuals who basically now have the power of eminent domain and can take property if they so desire. And we are extremely concerned about that, in particular because our experience with Kibata over the past year and a half during the EIS process has been less than a positive experience. The will of Kibata to follow open public process and good faith seems to be iffy at best, and we are concerned that if you are concentrating the power of eminent domain in the hands of basically three people, two of which have a vested interest in taking land outside of of their responsibilities on Kibata. We just really question that and question the the power of concentrating eminent domain in the hands of basically three private individuals who are not elected officials or who are not, well, they're appointed, but it's a semi-autonomous board. So basically that covers my testimony.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Stephanie?
I'd just like a comment. You say a five-member, it takes three to make a quorum. Most of the Senate committees down here work on the same principle.
Right, but you are elected.
Pardon?
You are elected. You are actual representatives of the people. These are the members of Kibata are appointed to the board and are private individuals.
We deal with a lot of private individuals.
Understood completely, but at least if there's an issue, it's actually possible for the voters to, vote what their opinions are in regards to actions that you take. The Kibata board is a very different thing.
Okay, thank you very much, Stephanie. Emily Terry?
Emily, we'd like if you could do this in 3 minutes. It would help us. We're 15 minutes over right now.
Can do. Thank you very much for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Emily Ferry, Ferry like a boat. I work with the Alaska Transportation Priorities Project. And we are a statewide watchdog group advocating for safe, reliable, efficient, and fiscally responsible transportation within the state. One thing I wanted to bring to the committee's attention was the 2005 annual report from Kibata, and I was taking a look at their projected budget, and about $256 million is basically still out there with an unidentified funding source. So even if we are able to bond for about $200 million of revenue for this project, there's still a huge amount of money out there that we need to find and fund this project. Our concern is that it will take away from the other roads within the state that are in need of repair. We've heard a lot about the road in Matsu, the Seward Highway, and the deaths that have happened along those roadways. So we're concerned that overall this project will continue to consume much-needed funding into the future, not just this year. Secondly, our concern is in the process of prioritizing. And one of the board members is Commissioner, Department of Transportation Commissioner Mike Barton, who oversees the STIP process, whereby we prioritize our transportation projects within the state. He's also a member of the Kibata Board, whereby his mission is to build this bridge. That's the stated intent. And so we believe it's a conflict of interest where, and one role he's supposed to be prioritizing, saying this is more important than this, and another role he's saying we're going to build it, and that's our mission. And we believe that position, the commissioner's position, should be removed from the Kibata board. So in the context of discussing the structure of Kibata, wanted to bring that up. And in closing, just wanted to say that we are glad to see this contract tightened up. I think it always makes sense when you have a contract to make it as tight and clear as possible. And secondly, we certainly don't want to see the state's credit rating affected by this particular project. And so we're also pleased to hear that won't occur, that the credit won't be affected. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for Emily?
I have a question. How does the commissioner get appointed, the commissioner Barton get appointed to the Kibata board? I mean, how did that happen?
I believe it's in the authorizing legislation. So when the legislature originally drafted up the structure of it. And so it's my understanding that it's also something that the legislature could remedy. So.
Yeah, and there are legislative members too, non-voting as I recall.
Correct.
Thank you.
Is your group affiliated with any other political or watchdog group?
We work with other organizations, but we're essentially a standalone organization. We have an advisory board with retired DOT engineers, people within the state, and our funding comes through a variety of foundations. But,
do you think this is a conflict then, or what you're here today of yours?
That I'm here today?
Well, yeah, you're here, showing your thoughts on not building the bridge. Do you think that's a conflict with any of the other groups you're associated with?
No, I don't think so. I think we're pretty consistent in our message that we believe that we should spend our transportation dollars on our existing infrastructure first and foremost and improve the roadways, the ferries, the airports, the ports and harbors that we have as a top priority. And we try to be as consistent as possible in that message.
Thank you. And Colleen James.
Yes, thank you. Coming at the tail end of this process, my name is Colleen James, and I live in Homer. I am a private taxpayer. And I would just like to say that I am not in support of this project and that most of the points I was going to bring up have been covered very well today.
Colleen, is there any particular of those points you'd just like to highlight?
I believe that we are drawing money out of our state budget that should be spent on more critical projects.
Okay. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Are there any other people online or present that want to testify? People want to testify? Mr. Wells?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Wells. I'm the executive director for the Matsu RC&D, and I have an executive board who is very much in support of this project, and I didn't know this hearing was going on today. I happened to be in the room, and I thought you should know that there are many people in the Matsu borough and who support this project. I've been to most of the Kubota meetings. I think they've been very open, very informative. This EIS process has really delivered a lot of great baseline information about the feasibility of this project. And we do have current needs in our transportation system in the Matsu Valley, and I'm confident they will be addressed. But as a youngster who grew up in Anchorage since 1960 and remembered nothing between West Anchorage and East Anchorage besides a bog, and seeing Wasilla for the first time in 61 and seeing it today, I know that future is going to be upon us very shortly. And this bridge, even if it proceeds at the proposed rate of construction that it is now, will be a vital and significant positive contribution to the transportation network in the state. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Questions for Mr. Wells? Thank you very much. Okay, at this time, we have Mr. Green come back. I understand that you have an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In the committee substitute, there was just one. I think it's an inadvertent transposition of words on page 8 of the committee substitute, line 24. The sentence starting on line 24 reads, "The bond resolution shall aggregate the principal amount and fix the denomination." It should read, "The bond resolution shall fix the aggregate principal amount." And so we're recommending that after the word "shall," you insert the words "fix" and "the." After the word "aggregate," strike the word "the." And in the next to last word where "fix" shows up again, strike that second, strike the "fix" near the end of the line there. So it would read, "The bond resolution shall fix the aggregate principal amount, and then the rest of it is fine.
Okay. Let me make sure. Ms. Clemon, you have that?
Yes.
Okay. What we'll do then, Mr. Green, is send this back to the drafters to capture the essence of that. I think it's pretty cut and dry. Do you feel comfortable doing that back to the drafters? The chair would like to move this at all possible, and I think it's fair to say that this is really more of a financial committee item than it is a transportation piece. I've already said that. So with that, let's take Senator Calvert.
Do you want me to make a motion?
Yeah, let's take about 30 seconds here. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I just would pass on to you that particular language was one of the pieces of language that bond counsel had recommended we fix. And so what I'm giving you is their recommendation in terms of what that particular language say.
Thank you. We'll take about a 30-second break. Committee comes back to order, and Senator Cowdery for amendment.
Yes, I would like to of the prior testimony to amend this bill, have let legal do that, and but we still, as amended and as proposed amended, pass this bill to the next committee.
Okay, and it does not have a physical note. Minus, it's a zero physical note. Yes. Are there objections? Okay, seeing none, this bill will pass to Senate Finance. Before we go, number one, thanks for each of you that came. I know there's contrasting points of view. In the chair's opinion, this is more about financing things than it is the business of welding steel and driving on roads. But it's an issue to be determined. This is enabling legislation that allows us to take the next step. I think Alaska would think that's fair. And then Alaskan's voice will be heard about where we go from here. And with that, we're adjourned.